Well, welcome to the very first My Life in Football, and I'm overjoyed, to say the least, to be joined by, well, an absolute living legend in Jim Cooper. So I suppose first things first, welcome Jim, and thanks for giving up your time.
Yeah, you're welcome, David. Nice to see you again.
And you, mate, and you. I suppose for people that don't know what the show's going to be about, eventually we're going to try and get as many people as we can, chairman, managers, supporters, volunteers on, just to give their story of how they were, how they've been in football and where they started from and to where they are now, just to give you some kind of an insight into what they do for their football clubs. And there's probably no better place to start than, as I said, than a living legend like Jim. So I suppose, Jim, I suppose one of the first things then for me would be like, I suppose, where did it all start for you? I mean, being a police officer and stuff, I mean, where did that, where did football all start in your career?
Well, I think going way back before I joined the old Bill, my brother was a pro footballer at Coventry City. He went up there with Mark Hateley, Tom English, Nicky Phillips, Steve Jacobs, all local boys from around the Newham, Barking and Dagenham area. And you know, obviously I was a young lad. And basically, that's going back a few years, YTS forms at Tottenham. And then, because my dad said my brother had had a bad experience at Coventry with a bad injury, he said, why don't you give it a few years? If you're good enough when you're older, then they'll come back in for you. And then, you know, like most young kids, you find beer and women. I don't know what order that's going to come into now. There's a long time ago. And to be fair, the pro side of it, I was probably not good enough to be a pro, but I was lucky enough to end up playing, initially playing for Lanesdale and Ilford under John Steele. We won the league with some excellent players in and around that side. Got bought by Dagenham, and that was my local club. I think it was for $3,000 at the time, and that was long, long time ago. So, you know, quite a bit of money, I suppose. And then, to be fair, didn't really have a great time at Dagenham, injuries, etc. And ended up basically joining the police in 1992 and then played for them for quite some time. Got my first little look into management with Reedy at Romford, only for about 4 or 5 months. But, you know, I loved it down that club. It's a great club. The people, the supporters, the committee, they were all, like, really positive and so behind you. But then the opportunity came up to manage the Met. And as it was, you know, 15 years ago, I took the Met job on, and I suppose the rest is history, I suppose.
I suppose with the Romford part of it, though, I mean, I don't suppose many people, unless they sort of Romford fans or followed your sort of career sort of closely, would have realised that you were actually at Romford. I mean, was it the same sort of situation as it is now, where they don't pay the players, and you know, did you have some good results in that down there in the days? I mean, were they in the Isthmian League at the time?
Yeah, they were in the Isthmian League, and but they weren't paying. But they had like Steve King, you know, young Steve King playing for them at the time. Both Mickey and Paul Rogan, you know, good non-league players. And it was a good mixture of young lads over there. But, you know, it was difficult because, like you say, you know, even back then they weren't paying then. But it was great times with Reedy and, you know, as I say, like the committee and everything. And it, the same situation, they're still fighting for that, their own ground. And I wish them well with that because, you know, if anyone deserves their own ground, that they certainly do.
Any good days, you know, footballing good days down there at Romford? Any games that you can remember down there that sort of spring to mind?
To be fair, I was only there for about four and a half months before I took the Met job, if I'm being honest. But, I mean, every game was a challenge down there. I mean, me and Mark Reed, I don't know if you know, we go back, well, we were, you know, under eights playing football together from kids, you know. So when he was given that opportunity, he was my assistant with the Met reserves prior to that as well. So he just basically done the, you know, returned the favour. And every game was brilliant with Reedy and the players down there. It was a joy, actually. It was really good.
Mm. So moving on then, I mean, how did the Met Police job come about?
Well, they were struggling. They were, I think, second from bottom, and they were likely to get relegated. They were in the Division 1 level at the time, Ryan as it was then, Division 1. Look, probably going to get relegated, as I say. I took over with Gavin McPherson. Straight away, he came in as my number two, and you know, we turned it round that season. And then for five out of the next six or seven seasons, I think it was, we finished in the playoffs, and sadly got beat in all of those playoff finals and whatever. But we got beat to, like, you know, some good sides. Cray were a good side, Maidstone, So we were getting beat by some good sides. And then we won the league. We beat Bognor on goal difference on the last day of the season by one goal and got promoted to the Premier Division and where we stayed at that level until I left at the beginning of this year.
Mm. Any sort of games there then that sort of stick out to you in the first couple of years? I mean, was there some great games there that, you know, as I say, that spring to mind straight away?
Yeah, I think the battles with Cray Wanderers were always good games. Jengo, their boss, was, you know, a real lively, fiery character. I remember from playing days as well, and every game against them was really good. We had a fantastic cup run, FA Cup run, where we played Crawley Town, who was second in Division 1 at the time, and they beat us 2-1, despite us hitting the post in the last kick of the game. So that, those sort of games obviously spring out straight away. But, I'm not naive enough to think sometimes we actually got spanked a couple of times as well, which was a bit of a eye-opener in my early, career of management. I remember going to Staines, I think they put 6 or 7 past us in the first or second year I was there, and I thought, you know what, I've got a lot to learn here, re-management. Sometimes my game management needs to improve, and we'll probably do a little bit more research, which I've done post that time, really.
Mm. So, I mean, with the Met Police, I mean, I know when I used to, you know, especially when my brother-in-law and brother sort of joined Met Police sort of 10, 12 years ago. It was one of those things where you used to look at it and used to laugh and joke and say, oh, look, now you're in there, you can actually get into the team. But, I mean, was it a bit like that in the early days? Was it just police officers in the early days? And then is it still now, or has that changed?
So when I joined in 92 and played, you had to be a cop or a member of police staff. It got more and more difficult to get time off of work, and I've said this before, you know, I fully understand that, you know, the constraints around the police budget and all public sector workers is, you know, really quite tight there. And quite rightly, I think members of public want to see their cops walking the streets or whatever, rather than playing football on a Saturday afternoon. So I get where the club went. And initially, I didn't. So all they've done is they started to bring in outside players, and as a bit of a protest, I left the club for a little while. And just packed up for about a year and a bit or whatever. And then came to my senses and realised, you know what, that is the way to fall, it's only going to get worse. So I then went back to the Met. Especially from the managerial point of view, it was a godsend. It had to happen because the standard we were playing at, we would have been trashed every single game if we didn't have those. Mm. But moving on as well from that, we then, about 6-7 years ago, we had a discussion with Les Cleverley and Stuart Searle about bringing an academy or a youth team over to the club. And it wasn't that well received from the committee members, you know, in general as a whole. But we managed to, you know, persuade them to actually give it a go. And to be fair, the club hasn't looked back since. And there's a massive untapped resources in youth football. Because if you get maybe 2 or 3 come through to the youth team every year, you're paying them a lot less money than you would do if you had to go out and bring players in. And some of the players, the youth players that the Met have now got as well and have done in recent seasons has been, you know, exceptional.
Mm. I mean, who's the biggest rivals then? Were the biggest rivals for Met Police, for the club itself?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, local to Invercourt, you had Molesey, which is literally a stone's throw away. We were playing in different divisions, I suppose Leatherhead and Kingstonians and Corinthian Casuals, maybe they were the local derbies, for want of a better word, I think. It's a bit strange because, you know, the Met Police aren't a region, they're not a town or a city. You know, they're a works team in essence, really, albeit there's no cop playing.
Mm.
But certainly, like your Leatherhead, Kingstonians, youth treat the games against us as a local derby because we were in the, you know, same environs as where they were, really.
Mm. So, I mean, was it tough just to keep the team going, you know, through the years? I mean, if you're just using police officers, then sort of having to go to the outside in the sort of the later years. But was it very difficult? Did you have sort of like a settled side sort of every week, or was it difficult with shifts and stuff like that for you actually to put out a decent side every week?
Yeah, it was quite frustrating when it was purely cops or the majority of cops. Because you're right, I mean, like, the Saturday morning, you'd get a phone call and say, you know, I've been working all night, I've got a prisoner that I've got to deal with, I'm probably not going to be there. Bear in mind, they've been working all night, and then they're probably not going to get off until 11, 12 o'clock that day as well. They're not going to be ready to play a game of football either. But there was some, I mean, there's some really, really good cops that played football for the Met. John Daly being one, excellent at Auburn's, Hendon legend, for want of a better word. Ian Batten, Dave Newman, and there's some really, really good players that have played for the Met.
Mm. I mean, is it a case of, you know, when he was actually sort of in the job, I mean, do you ever sort of like, I know you said you sort of left for a little bit. Was there times, though, when maybe other clubs came in for you and you thought, or other jobs came up and you thought, oh, look, you know, I'll fancy a go at that. But did your career in, I'm assuming you're a police officer yourself, you know, with that sort of side of it, did that sort of, you have to look at that side of it, being a police officer as well, thinking, well, I don't know if I'll be able to give it the right time that I need to?
Yeah, so I suppose that there's two aspects to that answer. Yes, there were clubs that you know, made some inquiries about me going over to there, but I was so loyal. You know, I'm a cop, and you know what? They gave me my first opportunity. The committee backed me all the way, and I just thought, you know what? I'm happy doing what I'm doing here. There's no need for me to go elsewhere. The second point of that was that I'd sacrificed my police career, to remain in management, because I got jobs that were basically Monday to Friday, 8 to 4, 10 to 6, and that as a career development as a cop ain't exactly a wonderful thing to do. So, I picked jobs within the police service that allowed me to do the football.
Mm. So, when it came to the end part of it, I mean, was that a very difficult decision for you, and, you know, to leave the Met Police, you know, and, I mean, if you can, or if you want to let people know why it was that you actually, you know, walked away in the end?
Yeah, I mean, so I think that so at the end of last season, I was thinking, do you know what, I've been doing this travelling now for almost 27 years, and it was getting to me a little bit, you know, from Upminster to Esher three times a week was quite some travelling, you know, a lot of travelling and a lot of time. And I was thinking, do you know what, do I really want to continue to do this and do the travelling? So that was the first time ever I actually thought, do you know what, I think I might look somewhere else. And then the FA restructuring happened, and unbelievably they put, you know, the Metropolitan Police in the Southern League, when you've got teams like Bognor who are on the south coast near to, you know, Weymouth or whatever. But they put the Met Police there, and that made my mind up. There's no way I could travel to Wales or to Plymouth and Bournemouth areas to manage a game of football, because one, I wouldn't be able to give them the time that any club deserves, and secondly, it was too much of an onus on me to carry on.
So I suppose one of the successes, I suppose, that you had was the cup run. I mean, talk to us a little bit about that and how that all came about from start to finish.
What, the FA Cup run?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was something. Do you know what? We'd really underachieved. I mean, if there's one thing that I regret down the Met, that's we've never really had that many good cup runs. That one was just phenomenal, though. We were really lucky in the draws that we had in the four qualifying rounds. I remember all of them were a league at least below our level. We had a really, really good side that year as well. Toughest game was going to South Park in, I think it was the third or fourth qualifier, and winning away there. But the interesting thing around that is that we'd signed John T. Smith on loan from Crawley Town, and in that cup run, he'd scored, I think, 14 or 15 goals, literally in those four qualifying rounds. Mm. It was phenomenal. It was magnificent what he'd done. When we drew Crawley out of the hat, straight away they said, obviously he can't play against his parent club, so we were down the centre forward that day. But it didn't, you know, detract away from what a great day it was. And I know you're going to speak to some, you know, really, really good experienced managers, and they'll all say their FA Cup runs they've had is something to behold. It's brilliant. I mean, you don't forget the day. You had Steve Coppell, you know, a legend when I was a kid growing up. You know, he's the general manager of Crawley Town, and he couldn't have been more accommodating. He was brilliant. Whole day was excellent, and we didn't, you know, we gave a really good account of ourselves. Mm.
So who did you start off with then in the first round? Talk us through.
Do you know what, I couldn't tell you. No. I mean, in fact, I could tell you actually. I think it was a team played out near Gatwick, and the interesting thing around that is that I was missing seven players because Steve Sutherland got married on that day, and he invited quite a few of the players. Disappointingly for me, I mean, I you know what I'm like as a character. Trust me, I wasn't happy.
Which you're not happy because they
went all over the place, you know what I mean? But we got through with one, so I think 8-1 away.
Was you not happy though because they didn't turn up to the game, or you didn't get an invite?
Yeah, 6 1/2 dozen. Yeah. That's been brought up a few times, actually. I mean, I don't know if you know Steve Southern, what a player as well he was for the Met Police. And he was an outside player, but he was down that club for donkey's years as well. But yeah, so it started off like that. And like I say, the draws were fairly kind for us. And you know, it's one of, I think you need a bit of luck in the cup draws.
Mm. So you went from them. I mean, you say you played South Park as well. Do you know where else it was you had in there? Any sort of like.
I can't remember, honestly. So they were all teams that were lower than our level, which we were thinking of the draw. You know what, we can get through this one.
Was Crawley round one then?
Crawley was round one, yeah.
So talk us through that day then, when you taking on Crawley. I mean, what was that? What was the whole day
massive
like?
Massive for the club. You know, we thought it would be the featured game. They were second in Division One. We were the lowest ranked team left in the FA Cup. And normally you think, oh, they're playing the Rozzers, blah, 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 this, that and the other. We had TV cameras down all week. We had London tonight. We had BBC down. We had, like, the Times. Everyone was there, you know, coming over, watching us training. It was a week of us preparing as a professional football club for that week only, if you know what I mean. Mm. It was a great experience. We had videos of Crawley Town that had been sent through to us by other professional clubs who had played them recently, and they sent them through to us to have a look at them. We'd been to see them previously. It was just done as professionally as you would imagine anyone else would have done the game themselves. Big crowd. Say TV highlights. It was, you know, a fantastic day.
But it must have been fantastic for the club, in, you know, money wise as well. Because I mean, it would have been, say, for a, you know, in a small club, you know, no disrespect, so I met police. That probably meant, you know, well, went a very long way, I would have thought.
Yeah, almost definitely so. And they've had another great cup run this year, where they've earned a lot of money as well. And you're right, the clubs in non-league, they benefit greatly from having a good cup run, TV money, etc., etc. You know, so the only downside to that cup run was exactly the same as when we had really good league finishes, was that the next year, because we played poorly in comparison to others, all our best players were plucked from us, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We then had to rebuild the next season. So it always tends to be down the Met. I'd have maybe one, two good seasons, building a really good side, and then others will come in and some higher leagues or whatever, or just more money, and take the players. And I get that's football, isn't it? But there was a downside to that, you know, all that exposure, all of the players, and then they left the following season.
Is that as you just said, is that as a manager, one of the most frustrating things, if you've got a side and you're a smallish side and you get a good side together, that other people come and sort of start cherry-picking your players?
Yeah, it's frustrating, but, you know, the budget we always had, I knew that was going to happen anyway. So, you know, it's not worth me losing sleep over it, because it was always going to happen.
And that cup run, of course, also, if I'm right in thinking, was that the same year as all the riots in London as well?
2012, it was around about that time, actually. Mm. Yeah, I was working on those sadly as well, so yeah, that was a busy period.
So how did you juggle that, I mean, with them as well? Because I know my brother-in-law himself was involved in that, and it was quite, funny in one way, funny and not funny in another way. I remember seeing one of the police officers there get someone throw a paving slab into the air, into a group of policemen, it hit a policeman on the head, and you're sitting there and talking to the missus and said, I hope that ain't your brother, only to find out the following morning it was her brother that actually got clumped on the head with the actual paving slab. But I mean, how did you manage to get all the boys together, you know, around that sort of side of it? I mean, that must have been difficult as well, because they must have been working all hours, godsend, you know, maybe double shifts, all that sort of stuff, and then still got to play
that
football.
That was during the closed season. So
right.
When it actually happened, that was during the summer, wasn't it? It was during the closed season. But all the investigations after that, you know, they were building squads around it, and I was on one of the squads to try and find all the people that was concerned and whatever. And you're right, it was double shifts. There was loads of mutual aid. So we had cops coming in from all around the country to police London because of the... excuse the expression, the tinderbox feeling that it could go off at any time again. But yeah, it was difficult that time. But again, like I say, we had quite a few outside players as well at that point. So what was right, I suppose, what was born right was the need to have outside players. Otherwise, we would not have been able to put a side out.
Mm. I suppose, in time in football, I mean, who's been your favourite player that, you know, in sort of non-league... that you've seen? I mean, who's been your favourite non-league player and also that you've managed as well?
Yeah, so I mean, I mentioned this the other night. my favourite non-league player. I'm a defender and I love defenders. So for me, Paul Watts, Paul Watts is, he's about 54 now. So he was playing for Dagenham, Leytonstone and Ilford. And I think it was, I'm sure it was Arsenal or Tottenham, one of the two big sides that they wanted to offer him pro terms, you know, from non-league football to pro terms at the top of the game. And, you know, he works in the print and basically they couldn't afford to do it because the money weren't in it then. Paul Watts was an exceptional player, England's the international, great, great player to play with and to watch play as a defender. Best player I think I've ever managed, and I'm going to go with John Daly, because John Daly was a central midfield player who would chip in with 20-plus goals every single season. And you know, if you get a striker that puts 20 goals away every season, you know, you're blessed. But a central midfield player, yeah, he was some player he was.
Mm. You've gone from there. I mean, are you surprised, I suppose, matches-wise? I mean, has there been matches there? There's got to be probably some highs and some lows in games. I mean, what would you say is the biggest high for you in, managing at Met Police?
Well, I mean, the highs were when we were beating teams like Kingstonians, like Dartford, Maidstone. And we used to beat them and, you know, it wasn't a case of them being disrespectful. I just think they just assumed they were going to come to the Met Police and turn us over because they always had done.
Yeah.
I mean, Alan Dowson, you know, a good friend of mine, and he said to me, he said, you know what, before you took over, we said, look at the fixtures and go, there's 6 points playing the Met Police. Well, when you took over, you changed that and six times out of ten or whatever, you know, you'd turn us over. So there wasn't really one game in particular. Any game that we won was a great day for me, and then you move on to the next one.
Mm. Worst experience? Or worst game, shall we say?
Yeah, I think we got turned over by Kays, funny enough, I think 7-1, and that was only about a few years back. No, and there's another one, actually, and it's quite funny, because Tom Richards from Avely, I'll tweet you to the other week, I was watching Avely against Greys, and brilliant game, I mean, an absolutely worldy of a game, brilliant, but at half-time, Greys could have been 5-1 up at half-time. And as it was, they went in 2-1. And I just tweeted saying, you know, all I can hear is that the coaches berating the referee and yet they could have conceded 5 or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And it honestly, they bit, you know, and things like that. I didn't mean it as a reaction, but I was just like reacting to like their moment, the referee, have a word with their defenders and coach the defenders and they might be better, blah, blah, blah. And Richardson, he tweeted back saying, well, don't you remember when Brighton Sea turned you over 5-1 or so? And I thought, yeah, fantastic comeback for one, isn't it? Brilliant, isn't it? That day weren't great. I have FA Trophy. We didn't have. I'll tell you now, we didn't have a very good side out that day, though.
Is there clubs though? You know, as a manager, that you look at and you think, oh, here we go. I don't really want to go there because you've got, you know, you just got that feeling about them. Is there a club like that for you where you go to them and you just sort of, I don't know. It's always the one that's the banana skin.
Bromley were for us, yeah, Bromley. I mean, obviously they've gone on leaps and bounds now, haven't they? But during the early years, and they beat us in one of the in the playoffs as well. We used to go to Bromley, and they just turned us over all the time. We just couldn't, for whatever we did, we couldn't beat them for love nor money.
Mm.
There was other clubs as well that were really difficult to beat, and yet there were some clubs that we beat on a regular basis as well. Going to England around about.
Mm. So that was the next question. Is there clubs there that you used to like playing? So is there, you know, I mean, in the Prem there, was there teams that you looked at and looked forward to playing every year for one reason or another?
Not in as much as that. I thought that, yeah, there's an easy 3 points, but you always look forward to your games against like Leverhead and Kingstonians because the crowds and they were brilliant. And I used to get so much stick. I mean, it's funny. I mean, I've got to be honest, I used to find it funny. All like the normal cop sort of ones coming out and things like that. And I've got to be honest, some of them are, you know, very innovative and funny, and you don't tend to hear the same ones as well. When you think, fair play to Leverhead supporters and Kingstonian supporters, but and I used to enjoy it, I used to love it, I used to revel in that. It was brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, with football, I mean, since you've come out of football, I mean, are you surprised, like, I know we are on the show, you know, on the show, me and Keith, that you're not back in it already?
yeah, it's been difficult if I wanted to get back in it. I'd quite happily say to you that I've applied for Hornchurch, gave it the Stimo, fair enough. Avery Swift, gave it the Julian Dix, fair enough. Wingate Finchley, I made an application to them, and Aaron gave it to Shorey and Glenn, obviously. And then at the start of the year, I also went for the Hampton Richmond job, because although I was sick and tired of travelling, it wasn't the case if we got into the, you know, National South, I wouldn't have done it. Obviously, I would have done.
Yeah.
And they gave that to Gary McCann. So, you know, I've lost out to some very, very good people, you know, and that's the way it is. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, I want to get back involved there. And well, there's not a lot about, maybe, if I'm honest, you know, there's not that much about at the moment.
But are you frustrated in a way that sometimes, I know when I speak to, you know, when I've spoken to Paul before and Apple Wickingdon and Glenn as well, Glenn Driver, and, you know, two other managers that are sort of hoping for a job, and they, I think their frustration is sometimes they feel that the jobs have already been taken before they're almost put out.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think they are. Yeah, I think they are, mate. You know, Kingstonians recently, you know, change their manager, and within a day, I think they'd already appointed Dean Brennan. So it was already done, wasn't it? You know. But yeah, I'm now fed up. I've been speaking to Glenn Driver as well on the phone about our frustrations as well. Good manager,
yeah.
Really, really good, lovely bloke, top manager as well. And I'm surprised actually that it brought him and Paul haven't again got anywhere either.
So of course you've gone on from that, doing your bit of punditry and all that, and that side. Now, are you enjoying that side of life for the time being?
Yeah, it's really good. It's well produced. Ben does a great job on it. You know, got to know Jody Brown a lot better than I did ever know before, and Frank Wilson. And then there's a fantastic Charlotte Richardson who also presents a show. She's brilliant as well. So there's a good bunch of people that are doing a good job for non-league football. And you know, there was a little bit of stick last week from the, I won't say the club, but all you've got to do is go back through Twitter.
I know which club you mean. Yeah, I saw it, yeah.
And find out what club it is. And, you know, we'd done one of the games and they were moaning that they didn't have offer. You know, all we're trying to do is to promote non-league football. Mm. And if your club's sponsors are on the video that we're showing week in, week out, well, then surely that can only be a good thing as well. You know, I don't get it. But it's a great show. It's a good show and I'm enjoying it.
Mm. So, I mean, Is there a level then that you would want to get back in at, or is it, you know, if someone came up to you and said, look, you know, I'm in Essex, I'm not necessarily saying Essex Senior League, but that sort of level, would you look at a job in there, or would you be looking at
it depends what they're, so I'd like either a club that needs a total rebuild, so a long term project, similar to what the Met Police was, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Because I think that I'm quite happy to bide my time and see what happens. Just as long as it's a well-established club, or, you know, ideally a Conference South club would be ideal, wouldn't it? But, you know, there's going to be far and few between those opportunities. So, yeah, I'd go to a club that is looking for a project.
Mm. So, I mean, you must have been, you know, through doing your stuff with Back of the Net and that, I mean, you must have seen quite a few games. I mean, have you been impressed with the standard this year, and is there teams out there that have surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm tomorrow I'm going to go and watch Bowers and Pitsy against Basden tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would not ordinarily go to see them, but I'm looking forward to going and seeing the game tomorrow. I haven't seen Bowers this season, but I've heard they're a really, really good side, attacking and defensively, so I'm looking to see how good they are. But Dorking have really impressed me this year. I mean, they've got a competitive budget, you know, but they're a really, really good footballing side, as are Merston this year. A little bit disappointed with Kingstonians because this is the first year, obviously, I'm allowed to bet because I'm not involved in football. And at 20-1, Kingstonians for me look like a good price at the start of the year.
Yeah.
So I've done my money there. But, you know, there's some really, really good side. Avely are a very, very impressive side. I was really impressed with the way they're attacking, scoring a lot of goals. But that's a tough league, you know, with them. Coleshaw, Bowers, Morden, Haybridge, you know, that's a strong top five there.
Mm. I mean, I've seen the likes of, you know, Morden and Bowers in the last few weeks, and both extremely impressive. And I must admit, I was very surprised to see Morden lose to Bowers. I'll be honest with you. I'm not saying that, you know,
1-0 was it?
It was 2-1, and it was just. But it was just like it was just a really. When you saw the two teams play against Avely, if you'd have looked on the 2 days there, you would have said, You know, we could have been playing. We got a penalty against Morden, but it was one of those things where we could have been playing all day long, really, on open play. We'd never have scored because the defence is incredible.
Because going forward, you look really, really strong, didn't you?
Mm. I mean, is there teams though in the, you know, that have disappointed you maybe in the, you know, in the prem wise? I mean, I know someone said to me about two, 3 months ago that one of the teams that might struggle all of a sudden was Mersham, and then since that person said that, they've just gone on this huge run and gone into gone up towards the playoff area.
Yeah, I mean, so Hayden's philosophy is play football at all costs, and you can only credit him for that. But they were on a bit of a tough run, and if you're just going to try and play your way out all the time, you know, sometimes you just need to put that ball in behind the back line. But they were getting punished week in, week out. But you know what? He's got a really, really good set of players over there, so I had no issues with them. I thought that Potter's Bar might get dragged into the mire a little bit, but it seems as if they've steadied the ship as well down there as well. And I don't really think you can really look outside maybe the bottom four now of the Bosnian Premier and think, is anyone else going to get dragged into that? I think Hornchurch would be all right. I think Stimo's made a couple of shrewd signings. And I mean, have you seen George Saunders as well?
No.
Mate, he is quality. I mean, I'd be surprised if Hornchurch keep him. He'd be a pro, I think, before too long. So I think they've got more than enough to stay out of it. But I just think, you know, the bottom sides of Burgess Hill, who seem to be, getting beat regularly at the moment, conceding quite a few goals. Whitehawk, who have picked up a little bit, as have Harlow. But I think, you know, I don't think you can look at that side, many of those, you know, to see the side that probably get relegated.
Yeah, I mean, big one tomorrow, of course, because it is Harlow against Whiteleaf. So it's going to be a real sort of old-fashioned six-pointer
tomorrow. Yeah, Whitehawk,
tomorrow.
Yes, right.
Whitehawk, yeah. There's going to be a right.
I mean, they're having some really good results, and then obviously the result last weekend was a bit of a kick up the backside for them. But you know, that is a big game tomorrow.
Mm. It's going to be that one. It's going to be difficult for them. But I mean, for yourself, I mean, how long do you think you might be out of the actual game itself?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I really don't know. I mean, you know, our club's going to be looking to make changes, you know, coming in now. I mean, if you're down the bottom or if you've been underperforming, perhaps, you know, you might want to look for a change before next season. I mean, the thing is, I'm hoping is that, you know, if it's come the close season, there'll be a few. And you don't see any manager lose their job, that's for sure. But if there are any vacancies, then I'd like to think that, you know, perhaps I might be in the shout for next season, if not before then.
Mm. So, I mean, the actual, one of the teams you mentioned earlier on, of course, was Romford. I mean, your old club there, they're struggling, you know, one of the teams that were right at the top to start with and they've dropped right away again. I mean, do you fear for them?
I think they got beat as well the other night. Was it Durham? I think it might have been beaten the other night or whatever. But there seems to be a little bit of a gap now that's opening up between Romford and the side above. And I'll be gutted if they go down, literally. I'll be gutted, especially now as they've got a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel with Westlands being a potential location for them to get a ground, etc. And it'd be a shame for the club if they got to drop down to regroup to come back up again. Because Paul Martin, or Magic as he's known in non-league football, he's done a tremendous job since taking over from Reed. He's been keeping at that level. And as I say, the end of last season, the run they had, I mean, who knows, they might do exactly the same this year.
I mean, with the actual situation, we've met Police and, of course, moving over to the opposite league. I mean, if they were moved back next year and the job came up, would you be interested in going back to the Met Police?
I think my time there is done, if I'm being brutally honest. And if I'm honest, they've got Gavin's taken over from me, Johnny Nurse. So it's the same management team, bar me, that's there. And I don't think they need to make any changes. Gav's done a brilliant job over there. And I think my time there is done. I had great times over there, and if I'm honest, I'd like a new challenge as well.
Mm. So tell us some of the stuff that, you know, tell us something about the ground in Bacolt and what it's like there, and a bit behind the scenes as well of, you know, how the club was run, because some people, you know, probably wouldn't know how the club's, you know, who's behind the scenes as such in the club.
Yeah, okay. So I mean, if I start with the most contentious one is the budget. It's not paid out of taxpayers' money. Each week, members of the police, officers and police staff, they pay into a lottery, which the football club run. And, you know, there's 30,000 people that pay into this every week. So there's obviously quite a lot of money coming in, but that pays for all of the support within the Metropolitan Police. And as a result of that, then we pay, they pay the expenses to players to go and play for the Met Police. They have to pay for the upkeep of the ground, which is a magnificent old-style football club. The pitch is still second to none. Undersoil sprinklers that come up to water the pitch, etc. Old-style floodlights. Very, very few people, sadly, obviously come and watch, albeit now it's getting a little bit more because they're doing well. And again, as we said earlier, it's not affiliated to any local town or anything. And who's going to come along and start shouting, Met Police, Met Police? You know, I mean, they'll get carted off, won't they? you know, so, but the ground itself is quite old-style, but it's magnificent dressing room. The pitch is brilliant. And that is a good attraction for any players who want to come over and play football. Off the field, as I say, I think they've got about 30-odd youth sides now, so they're a chartered club. It's run so, so well with Mr. and Mrs. Ness, who run that. They run so many clubs up to an academy level. And then the committee are all ex-serving police officers. And sadly, because of they're getting older and people passing, etc., they haven't got a massive committee to do all of the work, as you know, that people have to do off the field to keep the club running. So it's difficult for them, but they get by and they do a good job of it.
And do you think that's difficult, though, you know, being the manager of it or being part of Met Police Football Club, to actually get people to come and watch because it is the Met Police and it's just that sort of stigma of police
force? Yeah, I mean, we did attract probably, I'd say, a hardcore of about, and we're not talking about the Clapton Ultras here, who are very vociferous and brilliant fans, and you want them in your camp week in, week out. We had about, I don't know, a group of about 15 to 20 people who had no affiliation to any of the players or the staff or committee, local people that would come every single week and probably travel away and watch the side as well. So I know it's not a vast amount of people, but even one, two paying customers that come week in, week out, you're thankful for them, aren't you? But yeah, of course, I mean, for them to come, you know, people to come over and support the Metropolitan Police is, you know, you've got to be playing the right brand of football to attract them firstly and then make them welcome when they're over there.
Is there any sort of like, you know, when he was there, I mean, was there still sort of like, how can we say, budding footballers coming out of the police force state itself and coming into it?
Sadly, we had Neil Barrett, who joined the police quite late in his footballing career, but he's an FA Trophy winner with Ebbsfleet. You know, what a player he was in his time, but he was coming towards the end of his career. Still done very, very well for us when he played for us, but he's now on the coaching staff of the reserve, so that's quite good that we've got that, you know, that police obviously, you know, managing both the first team and the reserves as well, so that's quite good. But very, very few footballers that join the police now want to play football because if they get injured, they won't be supported financially anymore. So it's a tough one. You know, you break a leg and you're off work for 6 months and you don't get paid.
I mean, is there any side of it, you know, I mean, it probably is, but I mean, is this, what sort of sides of it is it that you actually miss, you know, with being at the Met Police?
Yeah, the camaraderie, I mean, and being around football, because I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not going to play as a spectator at the moment. And it's funny, actually, because I know Keith obviously done that, he wanted like the poll around the referees, and I get what he's saying, I really do, 100%, I get exactly what he's trying to achieve there. But it's strange, I've probably not been at the games that, oh no, I haven't been at the games you're referring to, because I haven't been to see these games, but the majority of referees I've seen this year actually have been actually quite good. They've actually been quite good. However, if I was on the touch line, as I said, as the Avely guys were, as the Greys guys were, I'm sure I would have been gesticulating to them as much as what they were. But from a spectator's point of view, you look at it from a different point of view, which I didn't think I'd ever say about referees. I mean, I think I was one of their worst, you know, people up is Jim Cooper again today. Never nasty, malicious, but I've always been in their ear. But, you know, they've actually, the ones I've seen, have done well this year.
So you didn't turn around and turn to these refs and tell them you were going to nick them if they didn't give you the penalty?
No. That means I'd have to actually do some work then.
But, I mean, in all fairness, in that sort of side of it, did that ever sort of, you know, did when did you feel at any time referee met police differently to anybody else because of them being serving policemen in the early days?
No, I don't think so. I think some referees, certainly one referee turned up and he couldn't stand me. I mean, I've got to be honest, he was the worst referee. He was, I think he was an Eastern European who he just hated me. And it was so obvious that he would give decisions, bookings, sending offs, penalties against us because he just didn't like me. And that said more about him than anything else, really, if I'm honest. You know, he should have been above that. But yeah, no, the referees have been normally all right for the Met Police.
Did you get any then sort of from other clubs when you went to go to other clubs? I mean, was there ever any issues there where maybe, I don't know, any funny incidents where one of your team might have, you know, pulled over somebody that was playing in the opposite side?
No, but we had an incident. I mean, I'm not going to say the club or the actual person, obviously, but we was at a ground when afterwards an opposing player came in with a metal bar and swung at one of our players. Volatile situation. I mean, bear in mind I'm old Bill and there's about four or five old Bill, but it was packed full of their supporters as well, so we couldn't deal with it at the time, but it certainly had to be dealt with. We ended up going to Crown Court over it, funnily enough, as well. And you know, despite there being, I think, six or seven police witnesses about a yard away from it, he got found not guilty. So their fate, you know, he didn't do it unless, which is fair enough, but you know, that is the only time in 15 years when there's been something like that. The managers and staff from the other side are brilliant because they're professionals, isn't they? The game's completely changed, and you know, non-league managers and staff and players, you know, they're almost as good as being professional, and they were brilliant with that.
I mean, one of the things I always used to see, we always used to talk about on the show with Keith as well, was the fact around with Met Police when you was in charge of Met Police, you'd either, it would always be sort of one of those sort of seasons. You'd either start off really, really well and then drop away, or you'd start off really poorly and then sort of come up the leagues after that. I mean, did you find that yourself, that some seasons you'd be sort of almost alternate?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to what I said earlier. So when we had a decent side and when we kept them for the following season, we'd start really, really well. But then other clubs would come in and pick, because they weren't on contract.
Yeah.
We'd lose the players, so then we'd have to literally rebuild halfway through the season. So obviously then your form goes down and you lose more games. Vice versa, when we're just restyling our brand or getting a new team together, you ain't going to start very well at the start of the year, but by the time you've coached them, they get used to what you want from them, then you'll finish really quite strongly. So we were never really in a position where we had a side for two seasons in a row where, I mean, we finished fifth in the playoffs one season, and we got beaten in the playoffs against Hendon, and then the following season we lost, I think, seven of that side. Mm. So we finished about 16th. So it was frustrating.
Was it difficult to pull players in from the outside though? When you know the Met Police manager calls, or was it because you know you got such a good reputation in non-league football that people came to play for you, and you know, not necessarily for Met Police?
Yeah, I think some of that's true. I think I'm so honest with players, you know, instead of, you know, I think we all know managers that will just tell what the player wants to hear, I think, rather than be honest with them. Mm. If I'm going to drop someone, I'm telling them the reason why I'm dropping them, and that gives them incentive to improve, to get back in the side. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. And when I talk to players in pre-season, I'll say, listen, my aims are, well, so when Billerick are in the league, I'm ringing up players and saying, right, we ain't winning the league, I'm not going to lie to you, there's no way we are winning this league. However, I reckon I'm going for top five or top six to get in the playoffs. And they go, do you know what, my honesty, I wouldn't mind a little challenge around the playoffs, etc, etc. So it was quite easy to attract players because the pitch was brilliant, the facilities were good, and the fact that the police were never going to knock them for their money, because how can the police knock people for money? It's all, you know what I mean, it's unheard of, isn't it?
So I mean, again, I mean you see a lot of teams get players from leagues above and on loan, etc, etc. I mean, was that difficult for you as well, to go to sort of like maybe some league teams or national conference sides and get some loanees from there? Because hang on a minute, we're going to be loaning down to Little Met Police, or because of the name Met Police, was that difficult as well?
No, I think because of the amount of time I've been in the game, it was quite easy for me to get loanees in. I had Nathan Baxter on loan from Chelsea. He'd won the FA Youth Cup for 2 years running. He was an England under-18 goalkeeper. And he was coming. He came from Chelsea to play for the Met Police for the first 6 months of the season. Brilliant. Lovely kid. Excellent. So I had contacts at Chelsea, Palace, Charlton, the Conference National when Johnny Steele was either at Dagenham or Barnet and things like that. So I had quite a good pull of players, and they would send them over to us in the knowledge that I wouldn't be trying to tap them up to say next year, or I'd be looking after them, you know.
Yeah. So was that a thing, though, with reputation? I mean, if you've got like a really good reputation in, you know, non-league football like yourself and Craig Edwards, you know, and a few of the others, I mean, because of you've got that sort of now surround it as well, that you found it a little bit easier to get players because of that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, because they know what you're all about, don't they? And players are sensitive souls, for want of a better word, aren't they? They want that arm around the shoulder when they need it. But I think when they're going to sign for a new club, I think they want to know exactly what they're getting into. And if they know the manager, as everyone knows Craig, they know what he's all about. You know, he's going to be honest with them, and he as well, similar to myself. Mm. So I think that's a good draw for players. Mm.
Any fun times against Mr. Edwards?
Always fun times against Craig. Always. I mean, he's helped me out as much as I've helped him out. I've got to be honest, and whether or not he denies it or not, I think I was quite instrumental in him getting the Dulwich job when he got it. I was pumping his name out to Martin Ead all the time, blah, blah, blah. But since then, he's, you know, players-wise, he's lent me players, and we've spoken about players all the time. I mean, you know, he, even now, he's still saying, you know, any players, blah, blah, blah. And top lad, Craig, so much time for him. But it was brilliant to manage against him, because it was always like, you know, you can try and wind each other up, you try and wind me up, and like, vice versa.
So I suppose one last one of the other questions for us, I suppose, is 3G or not 3G?
Yeah, I'm all for it.
I'm all for it.
I think that Aveley Football Club is brilliant. And I think that's probably why I want them to go up as well this year in the playoffs, assuming they don't win the league. Because what Craig and everyone's done over that football club, it's a brilliant football club. The actual place itself, the pitch. We played during the cup final last year against Billericay. It was excellent. So for me, yeah, 100%.
Are you surprised by the amount of people that don't like 3G, though?
Yeah, but I don't get it. I mean, some players will say it plays havoc on their knees and their ankles and that. Okay, fine if it does. But for me, you know, the it's as good now as it is as grass is, you know, for me. So I am surprised at it. And from a commercial point of view, it would be something certainly I think that the Met Police would consider doing as well, despite how good their pitch is.
Mm. I mean, I know a lot of people, especially Keith hates it. He wants it all burnt. But I mean... But I mean, for me, I don't see the issue with it at all. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a difference in some of the pitches. You see some of them there that have got, you know, too much black rubber in them and stuff like that, and, you know, and others that haven't. But I mean, for me, I don't see any issues with it at all. And especially when people say that, you know, that a lot of people are at a disadvantage when they go and play on it. And you think, but people don't look at it in the right way for me. If you're one team in your league, say, for instance, I don't know, you've got 20 teams in your league now, and you're the only one with 3G in it, you've got to play 19 games on grass.
Away, exactly right, exactly.
And you know,
well,
and not being
one.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so I don't see where the disadvantage is, because, you know, not being funny, majority of these teams moan that they're playing on 3G, but they train on it. So I don't get. I just don't get it.
I don't think there's a course really for a firm base for a good argument around there. It's as good as grass now. You know, if you water it as well, you know, you've got a true bounce on the ball. Yeah, for me, I'm thumbs up for 3G.
So I suppose, last question before you go, then, Jimmy, you know, what's the future for Jimmy Cooper?
I really don't know, David, if I'm honest. I'm going to probably continue doing back of the net until such time as, BT Sport or Sky want me. so I won't hold my breath on that one. Alternatively, whether, you know, if the right job comes up for me to manage, then I'll be applying for some, I'm sure.
Listen, mate, a pleasure of being my first guest on My Life in Football. And
you're welcome, mate. It's been a pleasure talking
and,
to you.
And I know you'll be back in football and, you know, literally pulling up everything to get to the top of the league, and you'll be there and you'll be flying again. But so I really, really do appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us tonight. Thanks,
you're welcome.
Jim.
Cheers, mate. All the best.
And you.